Daniel Pletka is Senior Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Rudy De Leon is Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, and the two think tanks collaborating on a foreign policies effort. I want to thank you both for coming. Danielle, I'll start with you. Talk about the genesis of this collaboration. I know that you and CAP have been working together for a long time. How did this come about, and why do you believe that this is useful, not just for the people in your organizations, but for the people who consume the work that you put out? Thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here today, and I'm always delighted to be doing things with Rudy. You know, this is a bigger collaboration than just AEI and the Center for American Progress. This is a group of think tanks and organizations on pretty much every part of the political spectrum. And the one thing that I think brought us all together for this project that is being run called the American Internationalism Project, and it's chaired by former Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman and former Republican Senator John Kyle, is a shared belief that internationalism, that the American global role, that the willingness, not just on the part of our leaders, but on the part of the entire body politic and on the part of the public and thought leaders, was really moving in the wrong direction, and that we were not doing enough to try to build the constituency, not for a particular action, not for war in Iraq or war in Afghanistan or isolating Iran, but for America standing tall on the global stage, being involved, being a leader, a moral leader, an economic leader, a political leader. And those were the things that brought us together. And they're things that we really agree about.
Mm-hmm. So, Francis and Daniela, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with both of you. I think we've been meeting for almost 2 years on
this. Is that right?
Wow. And I think the challenge was to look at national security in the new terms 25 years after the end of the Cold War. They're economic, they're political and diplomatic, they're military and national security. And to create a diverse group of thinkers on both sides, in many cases who were used to interacting and collaborating with each other, most all of us who have participated have served in the government at one point or another on the policy side, on the Hill, but to see how we might be able to talk through some of these issues looking forward, not relitigating the last 15 years, but really looking at America's role in the world, because we all believe that the country has played such an instrumental role in the fair trading rules of the global economy, the right to traverse all of the international areas, whether it's the Straits of Hormuz and the exit of energy, or the Malacca Straits, which is so critical to the trade of Asia. But to bring all of these issues together and look for the consensus that could take us forward again.
Mm-hmm. That's the element, Danielle, that seems to be missing when I talk to folks on the Hill, when I talk to folks in the agencies, in the executive branch, is the dialogue is even missing. I don't think anybody expects consensus on every single issue. That's not realistic. But just the fact that there doesn't seem to be a conversation occurring, especially on the Hill right now, about a lot of these issues from one side to the other. And it sounds like what you're doing is going to serve as a wonderful example of how that can work among a diverse group of people from different viewpoints.
And I think you get it exactly right. Of course, at the practical day-to-day, minute-to-minute level of political discourse, Washington is Washington. People always say it's the worst it's ever been. And my view is you don't know much history if you think it's the worst it's ever been. But certainly it has become very hard to have a practical dialogue. And I think that there are lots of currents at play, not just a divide between the executive and the legislative branch, which I think has been deepening over the years and which is actually apolitical. There was a huge divide between the Bush administration and both Republican and Democratic Congresses. I think there is a divide now, and I think there was between the Democratic Congress and the Obama administration. That's really a different problem, if you will, and one that, thank goodness, Rudy and I don't have to tackle at this particular moment, because I'm not sure we would be as successful. But I want to sort of turn back and point to something else, which is a problem that I think people who are liberal or progressive, people who are conservative, perceived in their own camps, which is a growing sense of drift from the world, both on the left and the right, that concerned all of us. And that's why the word internationalism was there, is because we are all internationalists. That's really what brings us together. And it's exactly what Rudy outlined. It is this understanding that America should be playing a practical role in the world. And in the sense that we find new and intelligent ways to talk about this, that will help with the problems on Capitol Hill. That will help bring people together to engage more productively, because it's not just about Iran sanctions. It's also about trade promotion authority, you know, much less sexy perhaps for the moment. But at the same time, we have to understand that the real underpinnings of global prosperity are rooted not in our ability to kill bad guys, but in our ability to actually move around the world freely. And understanding that the economic rules of the game are in fact underpinned by the United States, that the ability to move freely about the world and the freedom of navigation is in fact underpinned by our ideas about power and our willingness to project power in ways that are peaceful and to the benefit of all. And I think those things are things that we've been lucky enough to come together on that form the foundation of a much better understanding than the kinds of things that we did at the outset, where we were all frustrated by the fact that when people talked about this, they were either pointing to the Iraq War, or for internationalists, they were quoting people who are dead. Right. We talked about that all the time. You know, Reagan, Roosevelt, Kennedy.
Right. As we were discussing and working through the issues, one of our rules up front was that we couldn't have the preface be a quote from FDR, Ronald Reagan, or JFK or Eisenhower, because we were really in a different period. And I think that's part of why this group that has been assembled with, you know, that's a bipartisan group of national security scholars and former civilian officials, members of Congress, and retired military, to look at the fact that the world in 2015 is dramatically different from the world in 1989 when the Cold War came to an end. When you sit and talk to the bankers in Beijing, they give you a view that, you know, before the end of the Cold War, there were only two sides to be on, and that they and China wanted to be on the U.S. side because that was the economic growth, that was rules of trade and commerce, as contrasted to the other world that was, you know, dominated out of Moscow. But from that came the rise of economic primacy in terms of the international dialogue. But at the same time, you know, America plays then and plays now such a vital role in the security relationships, not in terms of the use of force, which has become so concentrated on Middle East policy, but the right of any country to freely navigate the waters of the South China Sea in ways that in our history, you know, the Monroe Doctrine, no European power could dominate the traversing of the Caribbean or the Atlantic. And so coming to understand that these dynamics had changed, but that there was still the critical role for the Americans to find ways to lead in new and vigorous ways against the cyber threat, to make sure that international areas of commerce were available unimpeded. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is critical as the security alliances in Asia are, the TPP is sort of the consummation of the economic and the political relationships. And, you know, for our China audience, the Americans have a completely different concept of the alliance than do the Chinese. Americans have alliances to preclude war from occurring. The traditional alliances, you use it to fight wars. And so that's been one of from the end of World War II going forward, it is the creation of the alliance that restored Europe, and the same thing in Asia. A little trickier in the Middle East for millennials of issues of dispute. But just one last thing, and I'll yield the microphone back. The economics of national security. It's the fact of our strong economy that has given us the resources to have the national security strength that we have. And I think one of the parts of our discussions on this internationalism has been the need for economic vitality at home. And so that was a whole big chunk of looking at this exercise, because if the American middle class isn't thriving and sending its children off to be educated to serve in a variety of ways, from military service to the next generation of engineers to the next generation of teachers, then we're broken. And so how to reinvigorate all those pieces.
Danielle, Rudy alerted me to this collaboration just a couple of days after I spoke to Congressman Randy Forbes, and we talked about the interest that he's taking in hearing from groups of tanks from across the spectrum in concert rather than on a one-on-one basis. And the sense that I took away from that conversation was he wants to see where there is consensus, exactly what you've both spoken about so far in our conversation. What deliverables do you expect to be able to bring, or will this just be an ongoing collaboration where you will talk about individual issues as they present themselves?
That's a very fair question, and one that we have all wrestled with ourselves. So when we started out, one of the things that we wanted to do was to socialize our community to a new way of talking about this problem. And this is what both Rudy and I alluded to before, which is sort of this old way of talking about internationalism. For Republicans, it is this is the phrase, shining city on a hill. Mm. Right? And for me, you know, I'm middle-aged. That resonates with me. I remember Ronald Reagan. I was an adult when Ronald Reagan was president. I admired him deeply. You know, there are others who are young, slightly younger, slightly older, who have, you know, who have other quotes that resonate with them. But there was this broader recognition that none of us had a good way to talk about these issues in ways that resonated with people who were under 35. And that's terrible. Mm. Because if you are unable to revitalize your way of talking about an issue, your way of talking about the compelling national interest, the compelling self-interest that we have in leading the global system, in our values, then you cannot expect to build individual cases. You cannot say, we need a bigger defense budget because we need a bigger defense budget because I really want a bigger defense budget. You need to actually have things that we need to do that aren't, as Rudy rightly said, that aren't about fighting wars. They're about not fighting wars. They're about ensuring the kinds of things that people want to believe in. And so a big part of this was actually, we have a big community. Now we've got a steering committee, and then we've got individual working groups, and we've got folks from the Hill and folks from journalism and former administration officials and the left and the right and the middle, and we've got it all. We talked about not being one of those usual groups that comes together and writes a report, because of course, you know, we know of all people that not that many people read reports, gosh, shocking mm-hmm. as that is in this day of 140 characters, and that's a really big cop-out. And so a lot of this has been a kind of a cyclical effort of getting together and talking over issues, building new alliances, building new friendships, having new common cause. But of course, at the end of the day, we are think tanks, and guess what? We're going to put out a report. I hope that it will not be the end of this. And it doesn't have to be, you know, we all have big schedules. We all do other stuff. You know, Rudy was just in Jordan and in Israel. I was just overseas as well. We travel a lot. We do a lot of things. So we really want to just pull this together and figure out how it can continue to be an effort to really broaden this community and build the understanding that is needed, so that when you are in the trough of disengagement from global affairs, as we were sort of 4 or 5 mm-hmm. years ago, that in fact people are continuing to understand why we need to invest in this, not just financially, but intellectually, politically, every way.
Danielle, it sounds like you're searching for the same kinds of answers that people are all across the spectrum about communicating ideas, though, because the concepts that you're taking up are tremendously valuable and tremendously important. And the conversation amongst the group that you talked about is very, very valuable. And yet I know you also at some point in time want to be able to influence the broader discourse, the political conversation, so that the ideas that you do agree on become woven into policymaking decisions by the people in the executive branch and on the Hill. Am I correct?
Of course. And, you know, you talked about Randy Forbes. Look, there are lots of applied realities here. We have been disinvesting in defense. I don't think there's a lot. You know, Rudy's former Deputy Secretary of Defense. He knows this better than I do. And I'm going to turn this over to him in 10 seconds. But, you know, we have been disinvesting in defense. And again, people need to understand this isn't because we've been wasting money at war or because we are spending too much in places and we need to invest in the military so they never do anything. It's because these are the investments that keep our soldiers alive and maintain our deterrent. And these are things that have been forgotten. But again, trying to grasp a smarter, more intelligent way to make these arguments that isn't just, you know, America's the greatest power on earth, and we have to keep being the greatest power on earth.
Right. Rudy? Because the security debate is bigger than is the defense budget too large or too small.
Mm-hmm.
It's really looking at our strategy and our purpose and how we see ourselves in terms of the rest of the world. You know, the Middle East was a different proposition when we were back to that Cold War, and there were two capitals that you had to respond to. And in ways now that we see all of the, you know, there's not a single issue in the Middle East from a security perspective. There are multiple ones, and yet it remains as, you know, the vital point in terms of global economic growth because of energy supply. But it's breaking down these issues looking forward because indeed we're in a much different period than we were 25 years ago. And we're also in one of those great moments where the generations are shifting from the baby boomers to the millennials. Millennials have different experiences. This effort that we've all been participating with the senators at the AEI CAP and my CAP colleague, Brian Katulis, have really been to demonstrate that we still have the capacity to cross the aisle and talk to each other about ideas and not just politics.
I know nobody has a crystal ball, and it's impossible to predict with any level of accuracy the threats or challenges the United States will face in the coming decade, 20 years, and so on. But Rudy, your comment a few minutes ago was interesting. You're not interested in relitigating the last 15 years. To do this in a forward-looking fashion, understanding that we can't predict the future, how does that concept, though, we don't want to debate the past, we want to try to prepare ourselves for the future, how does that influence or inform the way that you intend to continue to go about this dialogue? Danielle, I'll start with you on that one.
I was expecting Rudy to answer, so I was actually sort of focusing on what he was about to say.
It will be brilliant, no doubt.
You know, I think that Rudy's absolutely right that too many thought leaders, an awful expression, but it is what it is. Too many thought leaders really do focus on relitigating the past. And other than the fact that it is intensely boring, it's also pointless. Yes, of course, there are lessons learned and we should learn from the past. But who was right and who was wrong is not a valuable exercise. Understanding as we go forward some of the key issues that are going to be vital to our national interests is at the heart of all of this. You can't say, none of us will tell you, you know, in 10 years, Yemen's going to be on fire. Actually, Yemen's on fire now. It probably won't get better. But, you know, that's not what the game is about. What you need to understand is what our interests are. And that was another big, that was, in fact, one of the first big exercises that we did was sitting around this table for 3 hours mm-hmm. and really hashing back and forth with people from very different perspectives what American interests are. And that was the way we formed these working groups, was to try and figure out, okay, what are those interests? What do we want to, what matters? And those are very constant over the long term. Americans want, of course, they want to live in security. Okay? But there's an element of importance to the security of our allies. And so we talk this through. What are the elements of security? What matters? It's not just a strong military that can defend our country against predations from overseas. It is also peace abroad, which matters to us. I'll let Rudy talk a little bit more about that element. Then there's another element to this, which is prosperity. Guess what? People like doing well. We like being the largest economy in the world. There are huge benefits from that. But what are the elements of that? Okay, you know, the elements of that are not just jobs. The elements of that are the things you buy, the price of the things you buy, the ability to get those things. Going to Walmart or Target, think about where those things are bought and how they got to our country. And how they were made and why they cost less there and why do you go there. Mm-hmm. People don't think about those things every day, but in fact, they go to your quality of life. And so prosperity was a big part of it and everything that feeds into that. And the last element was human freedom. And that, you know, you'd think, oh, yeah, no, of course, you know, those folks don't agree on that. You'll never get, you know, the Open Society Institute, which is funded by George Soros and folks from, you know, folks who take money from the Koch brothers to agree about human freedom. No, rubbish. Actually, you get them to agree big time. Actually, that voting, that freedom of religion, that minority rights, those are vital interests, not that we just have in Ferguson, Missouri, but that we have in Cairo, too. Because if we don't, it starts to eat away at our security.
There's an undertone. Pardon mm-hmm. me for interrupting you, sure. But there's an undertone here that I find very refreshing. And that is that we're going to focus on the things on which we agree rather than focusing exclusively on the things on which we don't agree.
Well, again, we're looking at America's role in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we start by all agreeing that there are things that the United States can do that no other country can do, that the British can't do or the French or even a rising and very ambitious China can't do. But it's more broadly, you know, we can look at the specific things that sort of generate the Sunday talk shows. That can be a completely different conversation. But, you know, it's terrorism, it's the resolution of the budget, how to deal with cyber, it's trade promotion, all the issues in the Middle East. Can we develop ways to use social media to deal with the terrorist threat? Because as I travel, and that's one of the great fortunate aspects of the kinds of jobs that I've had and have now, is that I am able to see a lot of these corners just back from the Middle East. But the one thing that links the young person on a bicycle in Shanghai with the young Arab man smoking his cigarette in the souk and the young kid waiting for the high school bus here in Virginia is they all have those earbuds. They're all listening to something. And so how to communicate, one of the reasons that ISIS is popular in parts of Europe is they have figured out how to send messages in to those young people that can absorb those messages. So in an era of changing generations, how to use social media in constructive ways, and then how to deal with those cases where the social media tools are being used quite destructively. The other is we're in a period where secular governments in some parts of the world are transitioning to religious domination. And as Danny just said, the cherished right of minority rights in a free society. And that because one side gets 52%, this was the case in Egypt, they decided they would make all of the decisions. No, 52% may have been on one side, but 48's on the other. And so in a formerly secular Egypt, who were among the 48%? Well, women's rights, secular military, private investment that generates jobs. And so coming to figure out how to deal with a world that is changing and to deal with you know, the end of sort of secular leadership and one parties to pluralism, that's a pretty hard challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're only going to solve that and make steps together, not only by engaging ourselves here in the United States, but then talking to our allies around the world.
Is there a way that you will be able to pull back after this effort and at some point in the future, and I don't know when, and say, we were successful in changing the dialogue in this way or in this way? Or is this just an effort that you are confident if you just keep plugging away at it, you're going to be able to influence the conversation?
You know, our thought has been to, you know, sit and dialogue. And it is a very bipartisan group, and it's multi-organization, and it's military, it's political, it's policy, and to just see how far we can get. And then can we take this message to the constituents?
We've got a presidential election coming up. I think that, first of all, there are large numbers of people in our group who are going to be working for either a Democratic or a Republican candidate, both. This is a company town here mm-hmm. in Washington, and the company is the government, and want to be members of the government as well. And we really have an important lesson for them. And I think that it has helped inform the way we speak. And it's not just that you hear Rudy and me talking about this and talking about how where we agree. Anybody who pays attention to the headlines knows that the threads of what we're talking about are on the front pages of your newspaper every day, whether it is the budget resolution that is now a point of contention between among Republicans, for example, or it is what to do in the Middle East, or it is, you know, caring about the plight of minorities in, you know, plight of women in a whole variety of places, or whether it is, you know, our alliances in Eastern Europe, the importance of bolstering freedom of movement throughout Asia. All of those things influence how we talk to these candidates. And, you know, nobody comes into any event knowing everything. That's where we come in. We do spend a lot of time educating people, and this has really helped inform how we do it. I want to point to something else that I think is really interesting, if I can take us away from something for a second. One of the worst parts about you know growing up is that what Rudy talked about in terms of communications becomes more difficult, but speaking in a way that resonates for people is also important. And one of the things that has really informed how I talk to student groups, and we do a lot of talking to student groups, is laying out to them the things that they think are, that they take for granted. This is remarkable to me. You know, it really, millennials, as we described, you know, they think the stuff magically appears in Target. One of the things that I always raise is, you know, when I went to college, wasn't so long ago, people didn't go on a year abroad to China or to Korea or to South America. I mean, we're talking about places that are now not exotic to mm-hmm. them. They certainly didn't go to Russia. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to Africa. Maybe they went in the Peace Corps, and that was really dramatic and everybody worried. Now, you know, my research assistant did her junior year in Irkutsk. I don't know what possessed her, but mm-hmm. these are things that they take for granted, and they don't understand that this is a world that can also disappear. And I do think that that's a big part of how we speak to people and how we underscore the importance of leadership and the values that we all agree about, is those things, you cannot take them for granted. And we don't spend enough time letting people know why they're there.
That's Rudy, it. Final thoughts?
Just, you know, we reinvent ourselves every 4 years with our presidential elections. And what has been good about this American internationalism project and the participation with Senator Lieberman and Senator Kyle, for myself, Brian Katulis, another one of our colleagues, we have one of the deans in the International Affairs Department at Duke University who's participated, is, you know, that they've been able to have the regular banter back and forth with you know, fellow professionals who, you know, have different political views. And it's not I'm right and you're wrong. It's on the one hand, on the other hand, and how do we we frame these going forward.
I congratulate you and all of the folks involved with this on the effort that you're doing. And I thank you very, very much for coming to talk about it with me today. Danielle Pletka, AEI, Rudy DeLeon, Center for American Progress. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.